Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 110, Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Matt Scalisi, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Matt, what's up, man?
What's up, man? It's an exciting day for the coming summer movie season.
Yeah, big time. First of all, we're big Woody Allen fans, and what has emerged today is the first trailer for his new movie, which I think we only just recently found out was called Cafe Society. And that's all we had to go on for a while, and then a couple of stills come out. Jesse Eisenberg and his former co-star from a couple of movies, Kristen Stewart, and all it showed us was that it was a period film, and we didn't really know much about the plot, and here we are today with our first look at the movie. Why don't you sort of break down what we saw?
So, yeah, I mean, I think we knew enough from the, like, one screenshot that came with the title of the movie when we found it out that this was a period film, and we didn't know that much else about it, but this is now what we know is it's a movie set in what looks like sort of Golden Age Hollywood, and actually, I'm not exactly sure precisely when. But I'm just, Ben, as I was researching this, by the way, I found out there was a movie from the 30s called Cafe Society, which now I guess I'll have to do some further research into. But yeah, so this movie is sort of set in what looks like, I guess, 30s or 40s Hollywood. There are gangsters involved. There are, you know, movie stars and studio executives involved. So, I mean, it's got kind of these great elements of, first of all, that period of time that I think we've seen Allen write really well in the past, with things like Bullets Over Broadway and Midnight in Paris and, I guess to some extent Radio Days also. And it's also got, you know, some criminal elements to it as well. Corey Stoll appears to play some kind of gangster in this movie. So, I mean, I'm pretty excited about it. It's not entirely clear whether it's a comedy or a drama, but there's definitely some good dialogue in the trailer.
For sure. And my first question after what you got done describing there about how this is old Hollywood is, in 2016, I guess we have our Deep Impact Armageddon between this and Hail Caesar. So we'll see which comes out on top. But, I mean, how exciting to see old Hollywood through the eyes of the Coen brothers in February, and now we get to see it through the eyes of Woody Allen, these filmmakers who have such rich histories and rich knowledge of the industry, and it's just always fun to see it through the eyes of creative geniuses like them. And you know, Woody Allen doing a period movie always means good things, even if the movies don't turn out to be, you know, particularly great. I mean, I know people would point to something like Curse of the Jade Scorpion as being lesser Woody Allen, but I like that movie, and say what you want about it, but the period design is fantastic, and the same has been true for recent movies like Magic in the Moonlight, and you can go all the way back to Bullets Over Broadway and Purple Rose of Cairo, and I think those two movies are the ones that spring to mind immediately. I mean, not necessarily because of the fantastical element of Purple Rose of Cairo, but obviously, there's the Hollywood element to that, too, in terms of Jeff Daniels' character coming off of the screen and his real actor self coming to look for him and make it right and get his career back in check. But also, you mentioned Corey Stoll's gangster character. It seems like kind of a hybrid of Danny Aiello's sort of lowlife in Purple Rose of Cairo, where he was Mia Farrow's, you know, husband. And then you've got Chaz Palminteri from Bullets Over Broadway as the creative artist, the artist behind the artist in Bullets Over Broadway. So the fact that those are names and titles that are sort of surfacing, I think, is a good sign for this movie. And you mentioned the cast, which seems exceptional, and Corey Stoll in particular, obviously, who played Hemingway in Midnight in Paris and was the biggest highlight from that movie. I'm really excited he's back and look forward to that character. There are definitely some question marks, you know, like, you know, you and I think most of the film nerds aren't necessarily the biggest Jesse Eisenberg fans in the world, even though he's done good work in things like Social Network. I'm not sure that Blake Lively's name really gets people all that excited, at least fans of Woody Allen. But Woody Allen has done a lot more with a lot less, perhaps, and his, you know, long filmography, and it I guess we shouldn't judge the book by its cover and just see what he does with these folks.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm one of those people that thinks that Jesse Eisenberg was actually, I'm definitely not a fan in general of his, but I think that he did a really, I think he was used well in Woody Allen's movie To Rome. Is it called To Rome with Love? Is that what
yes.
it's called? Damn, the title, I forget, but it's, he basically played sort of a young Woody Allen in that movie, and I really liked that story, and I thought he did a good job with it of sort of being the stereotypical Woody Allen character, and I'm sort of looking forward to what he does in this. He looks like basically a little bit more muted version of that character. Steve Carell is in this, and again, I'm kind of back and forth on Steve Carell's performances as he's sort of, I don't know quite the word to say it, but it seems like he's got a type recently where he's sort of this sort of heavier characters where he likes to use a big voice. And I don't know, sometimes it works for me and sometimes it doesn't. I actually liked him in Foxcatcher, even though I think a lot of people hate that movie. but there have been other times where it doesn't work for me, for sure. He looks like he's a pretty big part of this movie, so I'm curious how that turns out. And, you know, really, Kristen Stewart and Blake Lively both, I kind of feel the same way about. I don't really like their personas in most of the things they do, but I think they're basically just sort of attractive young starlets that really Woody Allen has a pretty good track record of actresses like that, you know, that have sort of built a reputation as your typical, you know, Hollywood, you know, thing of the moment that he ends up doing something interesting with. And I think I could totally see him doing something interesting with either of those two actresses. Anna Camp is also in this, who I like a lot. I've seen her in a handful of things recently, and she's a very good comedic actress. I'm seeing that Parker Posey's in it. Tony Sirico from The Sopranos is in it. So that's a promising sign too. I mean, it's a good looking cast for sure.
Judy Davis back, obviously.
Yeah.
He's done great work with Woody Allen in the past. No, I agree with you about his track record again with the young starlet thing. I mean, he obviously has done good work with Emma Stone and Magic in the Moonlight and Irrational Man. And, you know, I know there are a lot of big fans of what he did with Scarlett Johansson in those four or so movies that they did together. And I agree to an extent with that, but I have faith in Kristen Stewart. I think she's a good actress. I think, you know, people tend to hold the Twilight movies against her, and maybe that's fair, maybe it's not, but I think she's got a lot of talent, and I think it's good now that she's working with good directors. So we'll see where that goes. You know, and real quick on the Steve Carell thing, don't forget, there was kind of a weird circumstance that put him in the movie, in that Bruce Willis was originally cast in that role. And there were, you know, sort of cloudy reports out there that suggested either he had a scheduling conflict that took him from the movie, or that he was fired from the movie and they had to think fast and cast Steve Carell quickly. I wouldn't say that they're the most similar actors in the world, so that's an interesting choice, you know, but I look forward to it. I mean, at least he has more than two lines than what he had in, what was it, Melinda, where he was like a glorified extra. So
right.
Look forward to seeing what he can do.
There can't be too many cases ever where Bruce Willis at the last minute could have been replaced by Steve Carell in a movie.
Yeah, I think that Steve Carell actually backed out of Looper at the last second, and they replaced him with Bruce Willis.
Yeah,
but
I think he did his casting. He came in and read a monologue as Butch from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. So Matt, a quick question before we move on that I have for you is about the Woody Allen lead that isn't played by Woody Allen, and we've talked about this on the Film Nerds thread a little bit. And perhaps on past podcasts, but, you know, it's always interesting when Woody Allen doesn't play his own protagonist, who he casts in the performances that you get. And it seems like on paper that Jesse Eisenberg is very obvious casting, somebody who I think a lot of people, if they were given the task of cast the protagonist in a Woody Allen movie today, they'd pick somebody who is as nervous and neurotic as Jesse Eisenberg, and somebody who seemingly has wanted a similar pedigree and has turned in performances that are akin to Woody Allen's performances thus far in his young career. But, you know, in my experience as a big Woody Allen fan, I tend to really like the protagonist's performances when they don't act like Woody Allen. And we've seen it where guys like Will Ferrell and Kenneth Branagh and perhaps Jesse Eisenberg, we will see, they tend to mimic Woody Allen and go for the same mannerisms that he provides and sort of give Woody Allen himself, since he can't be there, why not just be Woody Allen? And I find that too distracting. I much prefer the performances from actors like John Cusack in Bullets Over Broadway, Sean Penn in Sweet and Lowdown, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers in Match Point, these guys who really do their own thing and leave the Woody Allen mimicry behind. Are you similar to me in that you prefer one to the other, or does it even matter to you?
I really think that, to some extent, it comes down to the script, right? I mean, I think there are times that he writes his protagonist to not be very much like him, in part because he doesn't want it to be a sympathetic character, or he wants it to be, you know, something that's kind of a fantasy, perhaps. But, you know, there are times where I think he's writing that protagonist character to be a lot like him. And so I think some of that's just going to come through, even if you're not doing an impression of him as the lead actor. You know, that some of that dialogue, it doesn't matter what voice you're using, it's going to sound like you're doing a Woody Allen impression because of the script. I don't know that it's fair to always put it on the actors, although I do definitely think some of those that you mentioned are pretty obvious. And Jesse Eisenberg, the last time we saw him in a Woody Allen movie, definitely was doing an impression because he literally, I mean, it's a segment, it's a story about Woody Allen sort of looking back at himself as a younger filmmaker and a younger man. So I think in this case, you know, there definitely are moments in this trailer where it seems like he's doing that heavy Woody Allen character. But again, I think how much of that is him doing mannerisms and how much of it is the script, because he's saying very Woody Allen-y sounding things. And to me, that's promising because I like Woody Allen's writing style. So I don't mind seeing that. But I think, again, there are notes within that sort of Woody Allen character that different actors play up differently. And, you know, so it's not always just the sort of stuttering, neurotic, funny man. You know, there are ways to, that are sort of ways to play that Woody Allen character that are maybe a little more smooth and a little bit more kind of maybe what Woody Allen wishes he was like. And I think maybe that's sort of what it looks like this Eisenberg character is. It looks like he's sort of at least a little bit more successful with women than somebody like, you know, Alvy Singer is.
Yeah, and if you really want to sell a movie to the summer audiences, you should always quote Socrates, which is something that happens in this trailer.
Yeah, no, this does not look, I think this will be about as successful as Hail Caesar, which is to say not very many people at all will see it, because this is played up as a very, a very intellectual exercise. This is not a trailer that plays up a gimmick the way that Midnight in Paris did, right?
Right, and something worth noting, this is his first movie. Is this part of the Amazon Studios deal that he signed?
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, so that's interesting, and we'll see how that goes. But, Matt, a film that also released a trailer today, I can guarantee you, does not quote Socrates. It's the latest from Roland Emmerich. It's the sequel to Independence Day, Independence Day Resurgence. And, you know, I'm just curious, as somebody who has a broad spectrum of what they like at the movies, which are you looking forward to more here? Are you looking forward to the thing, this Roland Emmerich experiment where things once again go boom in many shapes and sizes, or will you be perhaps, you know, seeking out the Woody Allen movie instead?
I mean, I have always sort of been, I can't really explain why, because I don't like movies. I don't really like anything Roland Emmerich has done. I haven't been interested in his work in a long time. I don't really like movies that are sort of in this genre today. I would say I don't like most of the stuff that Independence Day has, like, inspired. But I really kind of have always wanted to see this since I first heard they were doing it. I guess just purely for nostalgia purposes. But it looks fun, and I think it looks that way because it clearly is not taking itself seriously. It's clearly going for camp and nostalgia and, you know, referencing the fact that this was a movie that we all like, you know, about 20 years ago. And that, I mean, there's a Jeff Goldblum line in the trailer where he says something about how they always go for the landmarks. Like, it's definitely winking at itself and knows that this is a silly premise. And so I guess it's a little bit easier for me to take rather than this sort of, I feel like what it's all really turned to is like disaster movies now. There's a lot of hand-wringing and there's a lot of like, you know, well, how would people really react? It's like, well, we already know because we've lived through terrible things happening in the last 20 years and it wasn't fun. So I don't want to watch a movie of that. And Independence Day was never a movie that asked you what it might really be like if aliens blew up the White House. It never actually asked you to contemplate consequences in that movie. And so, I mean, I think that sort of childish, you know, not thoughtful approach to this kind of genre is maybe exciting to me. Like, I'm fine to go watch it just for sheer spectacle and, like, not really have to think about anything while I watch it.
Yeah, I'm actually weirdly excited about it. I think it's a pretty entertaining trailer, and it obviously does the things that Roland Emmerich has obviously been known to do in the past 20 years or so. I loved Independence Day when I saw it. I was, you know, for lack of a better term, blown away when I saw it when I was about 11 years old, and I'm sure I saw it more than once at the theater, and it just had amazing special effects, and I didn't know that those things could be done on screen. And, you know, I think it holds up in the way that it should hold up. It's just kind of a cheesy blockbuster that again has amazing effects that definitely hold up. And, you know, I Liam Hemsworth is in this movie, and that's not exactly a big selling point for me specifically, but, you know, maybe I'll come around on him. Jeff Goldblum is back. Bill Pullman is back. Judd Hirsch, Vivica Fox, Brent Spiner, from all these people from the original.
I mean, basically, it's everybody except for Randy Quaid and Will Smith, right?
Yeah, and that is always a recipe for a successful movie, so I don't understand how this one will get it done if it doesn't have Randy Quaid plus Will Smith. We'll see, but, you know, something that you just said, just in terms of, like, what Emmerich has done in these big disaster movies that aren't really as fun. Like, you know, I think of things like 2012, you know, which is an Emmerich movie, and obviously Day After Tomorrow, and even last summer's San Andreas, where you have these cataclysmic events that are just completely out of the control of the human beings who are having to suffer through and endure them, and they're just having to sort of wait until the storm passes, right? Until the science finally becomes on their side. And instead of, you know, that to me just isn't popcorn entertainment, right, where people are suffering because of natural occurrences. You know, I think of, like, The Perfect Storm as another example of that. To me, it's sort of like special effects porn. Let's make it just because we can. The thing that draws me about Independence Day in this sequel is, you know, there are similar stakes in that, look, it's the end of the world, but at least at the dumbest possible level, the humans have a choice, and the humans have at least some control and have the opportunity to fight back. And then at that point, the stakes become interesting and relatable. if that's even possible. And yes. More importantly, it just becomes entertaining. And I think that
I agree. It is honestly, I think you put your finger on it. I mean, the disaster movie becomes, I think that's why these sorts of movies did so well in the 90s, because they're not actually disaster movies. They sort of mask as that, but what they actually are action adventure movies where there's a bad guy and a good guy is fully equipped to beat him, right? And I mean, that it's totally absurd, and but that doesn't matter. It's the sort of structure of the actual story is not actually that of a disaster movie. It's not like those movies in the 70s where there's a building burning down or a ship flips over, and it's just like, my God, what do we have to do to survive? It's like there is an actual victory to be won in the movie, and it makes you feel good, and it's good popcorn stuff. And it's not 2012 where we're all like having to think about like billions of people dying, even though clearly this movie, if it got into that, if this movie starts to examine the like existential death toll of what's happening in these sequences, it's not going to be fun, but it doesn't look like it has any interest in doing that, which is great.
Yeah. And look, it's an alien invasion movie too. And that those movies shouldn't be taken that seriously, and perhaps there's an allegorical message in Independence Day Resurgence. But look, by definition, this movie is in the same genre of Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Right.
So by movie law, we shouldn't take it that seriously, and we should just have fun. I think what we should take seriously is if we in fact have fun or don't, and that's on Roland Emmerich to prove that he can still make that happen, and it's been a while since he's been able to do that. I think it's been a while since he's been taken seriously as a filmmaker, and, you know, not to say that he was all that, you know, taken all that seriously as a filmmaker.
Well, he was a box office force, at least. I mean, he was a force in Hollywood, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, he was making Universal Soldier and Independence Day, and you know, The Patriot is probably the movie that comes closest to that, but even The Patriot
oh my God, utterly ridiculous. Yeah, it's completely ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's entertainment, though. Like, I like The Patriot, you know, just as a genre movie. And,
yeah,
you know, that happens to have the backdrop of the Revolutionary War. It's still fun.
I mean,
he's capable.
I think it has a lot in common with Independence Day, honestly. Those are movies that we liked in the 90s because it was basically, if there's a theme to Independence Day and to The Patriot, it's just that, like, Americans are awesome and we can do anything. And if somebody tries to hold us down, we're going to stab them through with an American flag. We will literally kill them with a flag.
Yeah, and there's, you know, ships flying flags in this movie. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Roland Emmerich is American. I mean,
I'm sure he's not. No,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure he's English, yeah.
Yeah, I think
he just knows what we like.
Embraced it, yeah, he knows what his fans like. But, you know, and just a quick note on the plot here, Matt, which is really important, is this takes place, obviously, 20 years after the events of Independence Day. The humans have defeated the aliens, and they have utilized the alien resources to sort of bulk up their own defenses. But here come the aliens again, who are bringing an even heavier fight, and the humans have to fight back again. And I don't know, man. It looks all sorts of dumb, but it looks all sorts of dumb in all the right ways. It looks all sorts of dumb in all the right ways, and I'm actually weirdly kind of jacked for it.
I liked that, actually. As soon as I got the first, I don't think that was evident the first trailer we got for this movie. And when you see the new trailer and you realize it's like got this whole sci-fi conceit to it, that we took all the crashed ships from the first movie and now we have like all this awesome stuff. Like, to me, again, it's like it adds to it. It's like, hell yeah, America. Like, not only do we blow y'all up, then we took all your stuff.
Yeah, and it's like and it's also got, you know, Jeff Goldblum and all of his glory, you know.
Right,
like,
yes.
So just good to see him back front and center. You know, like, even though I look back on, like, The Lost World, it's like a miserable experience in retrospect, I still kind of like spending 2 hours with Jeff Goldblum as the star of my Pitt pull blockbuster.
Oh, yeah. He's a lot of fun. And he's had, like, a recent resurgence. I don't know if he, like, needs money all of a sudden or what, but he's come out of the woodwork very recently and started appearing on TV shows and just making little guest appearances and doing commercials and stuff. So, I mean, if that's what made this movie happen, then great.
Well, it's the summer of Cafe Society versus Independence Day resurgence, and it sounds like you've made your choice, Matt.
I'm very excited about both of them, for sure. And I think this is – I've talked about it already on a couple of other podcasts. I have been very encouraged by the last couple of summers here with what Hollywood is up to, and I think they have – There's still plenty of dumb movies every year that disappoint me, but I think they've upped their game in terms of recognizing that audiences are a little bit more sophisticated than they seem to acknowledge a few years ago. I think we seem to be getting better products, especially in the summer season.
I think this optimism is probably just the fact that you're a few days away from a new Marvel movie, and that tingling sensation is just wandering through your body.
Oh, it's definitely a factor. There's no question.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.